Welcome to Torah Dinecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu, chapter 12. At the end of the last parak, Yirmiyahu was almost poisoned from the people of his city, Anasos. Hashem reveals the plot, and he is saved. This parak picks up from that traumatizing event. Yirmiyahu switches roles. Until now, Hashem has been saying to Yirmiyahu, "Don't daven, really, no davening." Here, Yirmiyahu asks Hashem why bad people are given the opportunity to be successful. Wouldn't it be better if Hashem just killed them? Hashem responds with the reason why he doesn't just punish the wicked completely. The parak ends with other nevuos regarding other nations. Yirmiyahu begins his conversation with Hashem with a disclaimer. Verse 1. Sadik ata Hashem ki ariv alecha. Hashem, you would be righteous if I were to argue with you. I know that Hashem is correct in everything you do. You are correct, but I need to understand this. Ach mishpatim adaber osach. Even so, I will debate with you about those things I don't understand so that I can understand them better and not because I think you are wrong. Madua derech Hashem salecha. Why is the way of Hashem successful? Shalu kol bogdei boged. Why are all those who are treacherous relaxed? I don't understand. Yirmiyahu is confused and wants Hashem to clear something up for him. The Me'am Loi says that Yirmiyahu is not asking the age-old question of Tzadik v'ralo, Russia v'lotovlo, why does a Tzadik have things bad and Russia have things good? He's not looking for an answer that will address all the mysteries of life. His question is more nuanced. He is asking specifically about why when bad people do the wrong thing, why does it work out to their benefit? He doesn't ask why are Tzadikim hurt? He understands that no one is perfect, and so there is room for judgment against anyone. Rashi says Yirmiyahu is either looking at the men of Anasos who tried to kill him and have no visible consequences, or he is referring to Nebuchadnezzar, who is at the height of his evil and keeps winning battle after battle. Verse 2, Yirmiyahu says, if he would say that their success is only temporary, Nitatam gam erashu, you have planted them and they have taken root. This is not a temporary success. Their success is well established. They have had fruit, meaning their children aren't being punished. They have results for their labors. These people are never doing tshuva. Karov ata befihem verachok mikliosehem. You are present in their mouth, but far from their guts, far from their thoughts. They might say, Baruch Hashem, Emirza Hashem, please God, thank God, but they don't actually mean it. They are not believers, nor do they ever plan on doing tshuva. Yirmiyahu contrasts these Rishaim who wanted to kill him with himself. He has a long history of following Hashem's commandments no matter what. Verse 3. Uvachanta libi itach. You have tested my heart and found it with you. In the last parak, the men of Anasos treated him like a lamb being innocently led to slaughter. He asks Hashem, instead of me, hatikem kitzon l'tivcha, drive them out like sheep to slaughter. Vahakti shame liyom harega, prepare them for the day of slaying. Hashem should kill these evildoers. Why should the nation be punished for the actions of a few? If these Rishaim are gone, life can return to normal. Verse 4. Ad masai te'aval ha'aretz ve'esav kol sada yivash. How long must the land languish and all the grass of the countryside dry up in drought? Me'ra'as yosheva. Because of the evil of its inhabitants. Why must even the animals suffer? The good people are hurting because the evil people destroy the world and don't get punished. Hashem hears Yirmiyahu's arguments that he should destroy the wicked before they can do any more harm. He doesn't address his overall question as to why evil people are successful, as each circumstance is beyond the understanding of man. Hashem points out to Yirmiyahu that his request is not logical. Verse 5. Ki es raglayim ratzta v'yalucha v'ich tesachare es hasusim. If you race with foot runners, if you're in a marathon and running with that exhausts you, how do you plan to compete with horses? This is a kal v'chomer. If you can't handle running in easier circumstances, why are you asking for tougher circumstances? The Das Sofrim explains what this means in the context of our parak. Yirmiyahu can't understand why simple things are happening. How can he hope to understand such complex considerations? The mashal continues, if you feel insecure on peaceful land, how are you going to survive on the banks of the Yarden where predatory animals roam? A person who believes in Hashem must not only trust in him when he is relaxing and life is good. His belief must be more visible when he is in danger, when he is in a place like the jungle. Yirmiyahu is not demonstrating that he has bitachon in good times, and so he won't have that bitachon available to him when things are going wrong. This does not address Yirmiyahu's initial question as to why the Rasha'im are successful. It is addressing his request to have the evil people killed. Hashem now points out to Yirmiyahu that he misjudged his people. All of his relatives, Kigam Achecha Uveis Avicha, even your kinsmen and your father's house, they were the ones who tried to poison you, who were riling up the populace to kill him. They may act peacefully to Yirmiyahu, but really they should not be believed. Even the Kohanim and Yerushalayim, says the Malbim, want to destroy him. This pasuk concludes the first section of the parak, in which Yirmiyahu begs that Hashem should kill the people, and Hashem says, it's not possible, you don't understand the larger implications. Verse 7 begins a new section in the parak, where Hashem is mourning for his people. We can hear the pain of Hashem for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, and the Jewish people. Azavti es Beisi, I have abandoned my house. Hashem left the Beis HaMikdash and let it be destroyed by the Babylonians. Natashti es Nachlasi, I have deserted my possession. Yerushalayim is called the Nachala of Hashem, Hashem's inheritance. Hashem left Yerushalayim, and finally, Nesati es Yedidus Nafshi b'kaf oiveha, I have given over my dearly beloved into the hands of her enemies. No matter what the Jewish people have done, they are the loved ones of Hashem. Yirmiyahu had requested that Hashem kill them. According to the Alshech, Hashem is responding that he is doing everything, said the punishment is being primarily directed to the Eitzim V'Avanim, the sticks and stones of the Beis HaMikdash, rather than the people. Verse 8. The reason why Hashem has to face the loss of the land and the people that are precious to him are because of how they acted. The lion is the king of the forest. When it is hungry, it ravages any prey. When it is satiated, it doesn't hunt. It is a majestic and beautiful animal. I saw recently on the news, someone found a really cute kitten and started to raise it. They noticed its eyes gleamed a bit brighter, its teeth were a little bit more pointy, and its claws were sharper. They brought it to an animal shelter, and it turns out they were raising a bobcat. Had that bobcat gotten a little bigger or seen other bobcats, it would have turned on its owner. The Jewish people were relating to Hashem like a lion, or in this case, like a bobcat. Elsewhere, the Jewish people are compared to sheep. When they act like sheep and follow their positive leaders, things work out well. But when they act like lions, where they can turn on their master, Hashem must send them out from society to the wild. The Nevuah continues with another animal metaphor. This one is less flattering than the comparison to the lion. Elsewhere, the Jewish people are compared to the Yonah, the dove, a loyal bird that is gentle. Verse 9, they are told they are acting like Ha'ayet Savua Nachlasili. My own people act like me, like a bird of prey, or which is similar to a hyena. This ayat is particularly violent. It is called an ayat savua, a colored bird of prey, because it is covered in the blood from when it eats from other animals, even while they are alive. This ayat is hated by other animals. Hashem says, Lechu isfu kol chayas hasada hesayu la'achla. Go, gather all the wild beasts, bring them to devour. The other nations will punish Klal Yisrael for acting like an ayat instead of a Yonah. Hashem continues his kinah, his lamentation on the destruction of the lands. Verse 10. Ra'im rabim shichasu karmi. Many shepherds have destroyed my vineyard. These shepherds are referring to the other nations who have destroyed the Jewish people, who are called the vineyard of Hashem. After they destroyed the vineyard, they didn't stop. They trampled the ground and Nasnu el chelkas chemdasi, they have made my beautiful field, Limidbar Shmama, a desolate wilderness. The mourning and grief continues. Verses 11 and 13 describe the destruction that is coming. Sama l'shmama, they have made her a desolation. Nebuchadnezzar has destroyed Yerushalayim and the cities of Yehuda. Avla alai shmema, desolate, she pours out her grief to me. Nashama kol ha'aretz, the whole land is laid desolate. They all are mourning because of what Hashem did, but it wasn't his fault. Ki ein ish sam alev, no man gives it thought. Nobody listened to the Nevi'im and did teshuva when they had a chance. The destruction is complete from one end of the land to the other. The nations are driven to kill. Miktze eretz v'ad kitze ha'aretz. From one end of the land to the other. Ein shalom l'chol basar. No flesh is safe. Why are they hunting everyone in the remote locations to kill any survivors? Are these individuals who they are hunting any danger? Is there a military rationale where they are going from one end of the land to another end of the land to make sure there is nobody left alive? The fact that they are hunting every person means that this is not a regular land dispute. This is not a political argument. This is a supernatural war where Hashem is driving the enemies to search for everyone. We have experienced this level of punishment recently in our history, and it is meant to be a sign that it was not a normal expected turn of events for people to seek others with such hatred. They are not only subject to an army invasion, which has tried to hunt down every person and kill every person. There is also a drought and a famine that's going on at the same time. The famine is so great as they have planted wheat, but kotzim katsaru, instead of the wheat growing, they have reaped thorns. Thorns are growing in the place of the wheat. Yirmiyahu tells them, Uvoshu mitvoseichem, be ashamed by your harvest. The wheat has turned into thorns. It is clear that this is a supernatural famine directed to them for their sins. After discussing the nations will attack, Yirmiyahu has another nevuah directed at all the wicked nations surrounding Klal Yisrael who are coming to fight against the Jewish people. This is directed to Ammon and Moab, Mitzrayim, Tsor and Sidon, strong nations who Nebuchadnezzar will also destroy in his conquest to take over the region. Verse 14, Ko Amar Hashem. So says Hashem. This is an indication we are beginning a new nevuah. Hinini nos sham me'al admasam. I am going to uproot them from their soil. V'ezbeis Yehuda etosh mitocham. And I uproot the house of Yehuda out of the midst of them. These nations, Moab, Ammon, Tsor, Sidon, and Mitzrayim, will also face galus. Verse 15, Hashem tells them that just like the Jewish people will return to their land, Vashuv Bericham Tim, I will take them and have pity on them. Vahashivosim Ish Lenachlaso V'Ish Lartso, I will restore them, each one to his own inheritance and to his own land. Unlike from the time of Sancheirev, after the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the nations will reconstitute into being independent nations one more time. There is one condition for these other nations to return. The nations also need to abandon idol worship. They will need to acknowledge Hashem for them to be able to serve as a nation in the future. In the past, when the Jews came to Israel, they wanted to do business with the locals. These people insisted that they swear in the name of their idols for it to be a binding contract. The Jews first did this as tongue-in-cheek in order to get the business, but then they started to believe in the gods they were swearing about. Verse 16, V'haya im lamod yomidu es darchei ami lihishave b'shmi chai Hashem. And if they learn the ways of my people to swear by my name, kasher limdu es ami lihishave b'baal, just as they once taught my people to swear by the Baal, v'nivnu b'soch ami, then they shall be built up in the midst of my nation. If they, instead of saying, let's swear by my idol, they swear by Hashem, things can go back to normal. But if they do not give heed, if they don't learn their lesson, V'nasashti es kagoy hahu, I will tear out the nation, nasosh v'abed nom Hashem, I will tear it out and destroy it, says Hashem. In that case, they will be exiled a second time. In this parak, we heard from Yirmiyahu, who wants to finally be rid of the evil people and asks Hashem to destroy them. Hashem says he can't do that as he wants to destroy the things, not the people. Hashem then says a kina for the destruction that is to come and explains why it is happening. The parak ends off with another nevuah, predicting the exiles of the nations surrounding Yehuda, and makes a stipulation that when they come back from Galus, they need to acknowledge Hashem, not idols, otherwise they will be exiled again. A lesson we can learn from Hashem is how little we can understand about why bad things are happening. When Hashem decides to punish, even that is done with love and with thought as to how to minimize our suffering to the minimum amount necessary. At the end of the parak, Hashem promises to even forgive the other nations of the world who he does not love as much as us, as long as they do teshuvah. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bas, Alexander Sender.